This recording is a production of Faith Builders. This presentation was recorded at Reach 2013, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders on March 14 and 15, 2013.
What a joy it is to be here together with all these ladies. And I had to think this past week when I consented to give a workshop, I was expecting 20-some ladies. And so I thought that would be okay. When I saw the count was up to 100 on Monday, then I was like, okay, that means there's 9,900 relationships in this room. And we're supposed to figure it all out as women, right? And we all have our ideas of how things should be, how things should be lived out. And yet, we are who we are, and God has created us that way. Loving our husbands, enabling him to serve. Being a team and yet being an individual may take a lifetime to figure out. Each phase in life, we find out more and more who we are, and sometimes that can feel disheartening. We think we know who we are, and then we enter a different phase in our lives, and we just don't know what's going on. And I remember a time, soon after I was 40, and Brandon and I were out for dinner, and I just started crying. I said, I don't know who I am as a 40-year-old. I know who I am as a mommy and for little ones, but I don't know who I am as a 40-year-old. And so as we enter each different phase, it can be disheartening to know that what worked doesn't work anymore. I have participated in Brandon's world of music, and people ask me if I'm a musician. No, I'm not a musician. A musician loves to learn new songs. I hate choir rehearsals. I hate learning new songs. I do not enjoy that. And true musicians, that's what, they just get fired up to get to learn a new song. For me, it doesn't come that way. I love to sing, but I don't enjoy learning the songs. But then I do love to worship in song. It is such an honor for me to be with 20, 30, 40 different people and being able to call people to worship. And so to worship my Jesus, yes, I'll endure the choir rehearsals. And so we're two very different people in that. I don't get Brandon's world of literature. Listening to a long poem that is being read, well, that kind of just makes me itchy all over. And I can't wait until it's done. And in those times of my frustration, I revert to the things of, let's just do a joke, or let's have a pun, or let's just have a good laugh, you know. And so we are two very, very different people, and yet we need each other in our difference and our differentness. I need him to show me the finer things of life. I do enjoy sunsets. There was a time, that just happens, you know. And so I need him to help me enjoy those finer things in life. And he needs me just to be more practical. And so we really do need each other in that. It doesn't matter what vocation, ministry your husband has, we are called to love, to serve the man we said I do to. In Genesis 2:18, it says, and the Lord God said, it is not good that man should be alone. I will make him and help meet for him. So we were created to be his helpmeet, someone that comes alongside, one who affirms and blesses. If it is true that two people sharpen each other, then we need to operate as two different people and yet as one. And what does that look like for us? As Mrs. Whoever, it's going to look different for each one of us. And sometimes I wish you wouldn't have to be quite as old before you are just okay with that. But that your differentness will look different. It will also look different in every stage of life. Young married, when I think of us being young married, I was able to work so that Brandon could finish school. And then married with babies and toddlers. You know, sometimes I went along on choir tours, sometimes I stayed home. And we kind of made our decisions an event at a time. And these are hard times when in ministry you want to allow your husband to do what he is called to do, but little ones just take a lot of energy. And so when you're in ministry and in family, it can be very, very difficult to know what is my role. You want their dad to be your children's hero, but it feels like you are alone when it comes to family. And now I'm at the stage of married with teenagers. I have more opportunities to participate with Brandon. But, you know, teenagers need their mom. They need their mom and their dad. And it can be such a tangle to know what is the right decision. And we can spend so much energy trying to figure out what is the right decision. And maybe God is just calling us to make a decision and to be at rest and know that His grace is going to be with us. And yet we spend so much energy trying to figure out what is right so that we experience God's grace. Talked a little bit about my family. I have four boys. My youngest one will be 16 in less than a month. And that's 16, 18, 20, and 23. And so it's a house full of men. And it's very much of a male world in my home. And that gives you a little bit of background of my family. Today, we're looking at a relationship that is close to our hearts, and that is marriage. And today, we will be more looking at how the relationship between a husband and wife enables serving as a couple, rather than looking at ways in participating in your husband's vocation. But I think more important than all that is the stark reality of what I believe about who I am as a daughter of God deeply affects my husband's ministry, no matter how we choose to participate. And so we are deeply affected by what we believe about God, being a team and yet being an individual. And so what I talk about today is very close to my heart, and it is what I believe. But you know, the bummer of it is I realize I don't live like this every day. I want to, but I keep messing up, and I keep messing up. And so it is at the core of my belief. Do I live it out every day? No, I'm a broken lady who just wants to trust God each day. And really, as believers, we cannot do it on our own. It doesn't matter how good your marriage is. You really cannot do it on your own. And we believe in redemption's story. It's a bigger story going on that sometimes doesn't make sense to us, and it's about His redeeming grace. If we hope to love our husbands well, we must understand two things. And the first is, what I believe about God affects how I love my husband. And so what you believe about who God is affects how you love your husband. Our childhood stories affect this whole picture. And the thing that feels startling about that is, as you're a mother to your children, you are also, that's going to affect them. And so not only are you affected by your childhood stories, you are also affecting your children in what their perception will be of God. And so you are creating a picture for your children about who God is. When our stories are difficult for us to understand, then we have a difficult time believing God's presence in our lives, and it will just take time. We hear verses like, I will be with you, and we wonder where He was when this happened or whatever happened to us. And so we wonder where He was. And so the questions I want to leave here with you is just, who is your Jesus? Who is your Jesus? And who is your God? Things for you to think about. It's not just head knowledge, but what do you believe in the secrets of your heart? Those things that you wouldn't dare tell anybody else about maybe doubts you have about who God is. But who is your Jesus and who is your God? So what I believe about God affects how I love my husband. And second, how I embrace the mystery of marriage affects how I love my husband. And there is so much, there's just so much mystery if you think about the differences, just in our differences. What are the things men enjoy? They enjoy to arm wrestle. And I know for my brothers, they would constantly, because I would, okay, I think I would box them like this, and you're supposed to box like this, you know, and I would constantly get them in their arms, and they would kind of make fun at me because I didn't know how to do this thing right. And they're constantly arm wrestling. And that goes on in our house all the time. It's just the thud, and I just want to go like this. And so they love to arm wrestle. Men like to eat big steaks. They like big trucks. And they enjoy fishing. And sports. And they like to belch. And so we look at that list, and it seems so meaningless to us. It doesn't do much for us. Because we enjoy the teas. I think Edith mentioned that, the teas she had for ladies. We enjoy teas. We enjoy dressing pretty. We just want things to match. We enjoy talking about life issues. And we like alone time. We enjoy decorating. And so those are just broad categories of who we are as men and women. And even though these intersect some with different types of people, when you stop and think about it, the man who likes to be rough and tough and the lady who likes dainty things are often naturally attracted to each other. And so marriage really is mysterious. And you know, God intentionally created us differently, yet our differences are often what create conflict. In conflict, we often find our faces turning away from our husbands. And God wants us to turn our faces toward Him. But we often turn our faces from Him as well, and we believe we are on our own. And so conflict is just, it's just a difficult thing for us to walk through. And yet conflict can refine us. It can refine us to be better daughters. And as we forgive each other and celebrate our differences, we become sweeter and softer people. And the bottom line is we need the Lord, ladies. We cannot do it alone. We need Him to show us how to love our husbands. When we understand our need for God and when we embrace the mystery of marriage, we are ready to learn more about loving our husbands. Loving our husbands is about being His helpmate by honoring and respecting who God created us to be as man and a woman. And so today I offer three pointers for loving your husband. The first is respect. Respect your man. So respect your man, and I have Ephesians 5, 22 through 23 there. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, just a little part of it. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave Himself up for her to make her holy, cleansing her by washing with water through the word, and to present her to Himself as a radiant church without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. And what we often want from our husbands is the instruction that God gives them right here. We really want them to love us as Christ loved the church. And yet that can feel wrong sometimes. I like a quote from Nancy Groom, if men are God's ambassadors to bring us the sacrificial love for which we yearn, we are, in turn, are His ambassadors to bring men the honor and respect they long to enjoy. So respect Him by trusting Him. Trust Him. And I believe there are times when we have to make an intentional choice that I'm going to trust. Some days it just doesn't come as natural as other days, and so we make a choice of trusting him. Trust him with your heart. What makes you smile? Do you know, does your husband know what makes you smile? I remember a time we had stopped at a frozen custard place, and Brandon had asked me what I wanted, and I just said, well, surprise me. And this was about 11 years into our marriage, and then after he left, I thought, oh, you know, I really like the, not the regular, the sugar, the cones, the brown ones. What are those called? The waffle cones. And I was like, oh, I wish I would have asked for a waffle cone, because I wonder if Brandon even knows I like waffle cones. And when he came out and had a waffle cone, I was just amazed, because I know that was something we had not communicated before. And so, what makes you smile? Does he know what makes you smile, what you enjoy? Does he know what makes you sad? And I would say, let him see your tears, but not to manipulate. Trust him with his leadership. And that can go in broad areas, just financially. How he provides for his family, live within those means, in the home, his leadership in the home, in your marriage. God has created you as a team, a unique team. There's no other team out there like you. And in family, what do you know, his discipline, the disciplines for your children, do you know what they are? And team up with him. Do you know what he wants? When it comes to disciplines, spiritually, your church, your personal life. To respect your man is to trust him and to believe in him. So we trust him, and then we also believe in him. And the first thing I have under believe in him is admire him. God has wired a man in such a way that he longs for and needs his wife's admiration. And I would just say, be proud of your man. Not out of duty, but as an expression of sincere admiration for the man you love and have chosen to share your life with. Your husband is a gift to you from God. And so we are called to honor that. And so admire your husband. Be his loudest cheerleader. And I think we can learn to be his loudest cheerleader when we understand and appreciate his values. And again, I want to ask, do you know what they are? Do you know what your husband's values are? And I think sometimes it's so easy for us in our culture just to kind of assume, we kind of know, rather than taking the time and finding out, well, what is important for you, and to appreciate and value those. Be his loudest cheerleader, understand and appreciate his values, be his biggest fan. He needs to know he's the man, no matter what he's doing, whether it's mowing lawn, taking out the garbage, whatever it is, when he's doing that, you can holler at him and say, you the man. And encourage him in those little mundane things, just like we like to be encouraged when we're at the kitchen counter and we're doing dishes and stuff, and they come stop by and say thank you for all you do. And when they notice and appreciate those little routine things, it warms our hearts. And it's the same for them when they're just doing the normal things, to let them know that they matter. And Brandon often tells me, it doesn't matter what anyone says. It's what you say that matters. And that is humbling. It is very humbling. And I think too often we withhold those words because they're just assumed. And so we stay silent. If your husband is in an organized organization, he will probably have a personal secretary working for him. And that can create just a lot of tension. And I want to suggest, be jealous, but don't make it his problem. Does that make sense? Be jealous, but don't make it his problem. And then third, allow him to be human. Don't remind him of his failures. Don't shame him for a wrong choice. To respect your man is to trust him, to believe in him, and to keep the mystery alive. So we keep the mystery alive because we know there's a higher purpose. There's a bigger story going on, and there's a higher purpose going on of our individual stories, that our individual stories are a part of just a much, much larger story. And it's God's story. It's not yours. And there are times I'm not sure I'm okay with that. I want it to be my story because I can predict then how things will be or end. And sometimes I have a hard time giving our story in our marriage up and telling God, it's your story, write it. And yet our stories as husband and wife together are a showcase of God's grace. And really, if we stop long enough to ponder the grace that God has given to each of our to each of us individually, respecting each other is about coming together in each of the unique ways God created us and becoming a team. You respect your man when you trust him to lead, you believe in him, and you keep the mystery alive. Now, I want to say it's time to rev it up. So rev it up, sister. Cultivate gratitude. We have been given so much in our culture that is so easy to assume what men are supposed to do rather than to receive what they do as gifts that are offered to us. And so when you stop and think of the roles that men have, we look at the husband as being the breadwinner, the fix-it man, the spiritual leader. Those are just things we assume that they are. And nobody had to tell us that. If you grew up in our culture, that is just assumed that that's what happens. And your role as a wife is also very much assumed. You're a homemaker. You're a seamstress. You are a cleaner. You're a cook. And those are just assumed roles. And so we often miss the good because of the assumption. And those assumptions are good things. And so we often miss the good. And we take his provision for granted. We go to fix a meal, and we open our refrigerator, we open our cupboard doors, and there's food there. Sometimes not what we want, but there is food there. And we just take that for granted that, well, this is how it was. This is how it was when I grew up. And so we take the provision that they provide for granted. And just a challenge, have you thanked him? Have you thanked him for his provision? And we get caught up in the mindset of a society today. And it's not just society today, but just our selfish society. It is not enough. We always wish for just another couple more dollars. And it is not good enough. And it is not soon enough. And I think the enemy brings those to our minds without us even trying to think that. And we're constantly tempted with those thoughts. And so it's easy to hold it against them for not blessing us. Well, if they would just be a little more grateful, you know, that I do the laundry and I iron the shirts and I do this and I do that. You know, if they would just offer a little more blessing, well, then maybe I'd have more energy. And it's so easy for us to just to stay right there. And the thing is with that is it's so easy to fall in love with ourselves. And I want to say that is exactly where the enemy wants us, is to get our minds turned toward ourselves. Words of gratefulness move us toward contentment instead of comparison. And so when we think of gratefulness, words of gratefulness move us toward contentment instead of comparison. Revving it up is being grateful. And second, revving it up also means to love being married to your man. And something that I try to do every day to say it out loud is to tell myself I love being married to Brandon. And so try that every day. Tell yourself, I love being married to Brandon. And sometimes it can come out very endearing, and then other times I will to love being married to Brandon. And so we have our ups and downs all the time, but it reminds us of the commitment, that we are committed to this even on the bad days, and it's not so much what I'm feeling that communicates what really is there, but it does tell us that we are committed. Give him your smiles. When he walks home or comes home, give him your smile. Give him your best smile. And of course, we hear this all the time, is don't compare him with other men. And that is so easy to do, especially the things that that are not his high points or whatever you want to call them. It's so easy to see that in other men and to just kind of, oh, I wish he'd be like this. And so don't compare him with other men. If you want to be his number one woman, he's got to be your number one man. Revving it up is being grateful. Love being married to your man. And third, affirm his good heart. And I quoted Nancy Groom here before. She lived with an unbelieving husband for years, and she says, if the truth be known, we are in far greater danger of missing men's good hearts than of missing their sinful hearts. Affirm his good heart. Have words of blessing as a helpmeet. We were created to affirm and bless. And I want to encourage you, be simple. Be simple. Now listen, ladies, be simple but specific. And I think that is so important. We want to speak in paragraphs and even chapters. I'm so thankful for who you are. Really. What are you thankful for? And so to be specific, and that takes time and energy. I remember a number of years ago at Thanksgiving, I decided I'm going to give each of my boys a Thanksgiving card, and I'm going to be very specific at what I'm grateful for in their life. And that took time. It takes time to be specific and to use that discipline of giving words of blessing and specific blessings. And pray. Ask God for ideas on how to love your man. Often before I buy a birthday or anniversary or some kind of card, I just breathe a prayer. God, show me what Brandon needs right now. Ask God for birthday ideas. We pray before he leaves for work. A simple thing to keep in mind when you pray for your husband before he walks out the door is just to pray through the five senses. God, keep his mind pure. May his eyes only see what needs to be seen. Open his smell that he can smell the beauty of the world around him. And you can walk through that and just use those five senses. And I remember the first time I did that for Brandon, he was like, well, I think I'm covered. And so they enjoy that. And why? why does that feel so vulnerable? To just be out there right with them and just pray for them audibly. We would rather close the door sometimes and just silently pray, will God be with him? And keep it short and simple. Get your children to pray for their daddy. And I remember times when Branna was gone for a weekend and or a week, and we would spend, usually try to gather the boys around about the time the choir program was supposed to start, and have your little people pray for their daddy. And it's just amazing how they know what to pray. And so praying just needs to be a part of our lives. And I just remember the times that when Branna was gone and we would spend time together and praying, how that just brought so much joy in my heart in spite of the loneliness of him being gone and me here. It just brought so much joy to my heart to be able to participate with my little boys in that way and yet participate in Brandon's world from a distance. And so we pray because it's an act of submission to God's bigger story in our lives. Revving it up is being grateful, loving being married to your man, and affirming him. And one of the greatest gifts we can offer back to God is the release of our husbands. Allowing him to be the man God created him to be. And that's our final point, is release your man. And what can happen is, you know, when we start out in marriage, we are determined that we're never going to hit that low. Whatever it takes, it's not going to happen. And surely, with God and a man like Brandon and I, that won't happen, you know. But there's a time comes when your husband comes home and the glow just isn't quite there. And so we try to fix the favorite meal. We try to do this and that, and it's not working. There was a time when the favorite meal brought that light back. And so we learn ways of what worked at one time now isn't working. And so what do we do? What do we do in those moments when we can't make him happy? And what do you do when things aren't as they used to be? And so when we move into those times and we face those types of conflicts for the first time, we just about go crazy. And the first thing we do is we move into control. We want to control. And so to release our man, to be a man of God, for God to work in his heart, is giving up control. And that is one of the most difficult things for us to do as women. I often say men, it's their eyesight that often gets them in trouble, but it's our control as women. That is our sin. It is control. And so often in our control, we would rather stay busy than cry. And if you stop and think a little bit, what do you do when things aren't going too good? When you're facing conflict, and it can be even be in other relationships, what do you do? Is it scrapbooking? Is it texting? Maybe Facebook? Maybe you sit and read blogs of everybody's life that's better than yours. What do you do when you want to cry? So we give up control. We would rather stay busy than cry. And I'm going to suggest we wait patiently. And if you look at that, we wait patiently, but not passively. We don't become a victim of our waiting. As humans, we are time bound. We hate waiting. At least I do. And you and I face this tension daily. I'm just needing to wait. And I want to suggest faith must be connected with waiting. So embrace faith. And what do I mean by faith? I want to say a faith that doesn't make sense to the world and sometimes doesn't make sense to ourselves. And if you read Hebrews 11, it mentions several people. It mentions is Abel, Enoch, Noah, Abraham. And verse 11 says, all these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance. Are we okay with a faith like that? And the faith chapter, it lists more people and ends, but then it ends with the verse, these were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised. And I often think of waiting. What does it mean to wait? And I think Abraham gives us just a wonderful picture of what that was. And sometimes I wonder, you know, we read these Bible stories and we forget that Abraham was promised a son. 20 years later, God reminds him again that he was promised a son. And then 20 years later, he finally has a son. And we read that all in, what, 15 minutes? And what would happen if we would read the first part of the story and would have to wait 20 years to read the next section? And, you know, you might be 80 by the time you find out that he actually had a son. And but we read our Bible stories too fast. And they wait, and yet Abraham gives us just a wonderful example of how to live. He lived in faith because he did today what needed to be done. And so to live, and to so to live with a faith that God knows, God sees, is sometimes a faith that doesn't come easy. I also do like what the Hebrew writer says. God had planned something better for us so that only together with us would they be made perfect. So he doesn't just leave us hanging with that last verse. He does continue with that. And so what does it mean to trust a God who seems to be in no hurry to carry out his promises? And I wonder to myself, maybe life isn't so much about dwelling on God's promises and how he answers my prayers as it is accepting every day God's love, grace, and mercy on my life as I do what needs to be done. That is waiting patiently, but not passively. It's living with an expectant faith. Do I want to experience the answered prayer as much as I want to experience his presence? Releasing your man is giving up control, but we cannot release our man if we cannot trust God with our personal lives. I'm going to call us to rest. Rest in who is your Jesus, who is your God. Trusting in God calls us to trust in him. And Hebrews 4, the last part of verse 2, says, the message they heard was of no value to them because those who heard it did not combine it with faith. I ask you a question. Can God be trusted with whatever you are facing today? And to think about that just a little bit. Can God be trusted with whatever you are facing today? And what challenge is God putting on your plate today? And I'm going to let you think about that for about a minute on just what challenge is God putting on your plate today? And then when we think about that is, can you tell God about it? And when we sit long enough in silence and let God speak, is this is the kind of faith that moves us to prayer. So releasing your man is giving up control. Trusting God with your personal life will give you energy to intercede for your man. And so I have intercession. Our husbands don't need us to be their fixers. That is for God to do. What they need is our intercession. But we leave the results to God. Good comes through prayer, not through criticism. And we are, it's a call to trust. To trust that God will work in your husband's heart and also in yours. It's a call to love. And we always pray, God, show me how to love. It's a call to rest. And I love a quote that Nancy Groom gives on submission. She says, ducking low enough so God can reach him. And so don't be his fixer, but intercede for him. And I believe in prayer. There's so much freedom in releasing our husbands to the Father who created them. And no one can intercede for your husband like you can. Releasing your man is giving up control, trusting God with your personal life, and interceding for the man you love. God's promise in the New Testament has always been, I will be with you. And as I reflect on difficult times in my personal life and in our marriage, I keep coming back to the fact that God is a faithful God. He was with me. Did I know it at the moment when I was going through my things? Very seldom. But it was as I reflected that I knew he was with me. There's a reason in the Old Testament that they built altars when they met God, because they were reminders. And so we reflect on our past and say, yes, God was with me. And that gives us hope for to live more fully in him. Loving your husband, enabling him to serve, is coming together with your husband and running with him, not for him. As a helpmate, you are called to be the woman God created you to be. You are called to respect your man and to rev it up. And to us Mennonite ladies, give it more energy than sometimes you feel. And to release your man to be the man God created him to be. And the two of you are a unique couple with unique giftings. Our marriages are always a bigger story going on in our life, a story you cannot control, a story you don't fully understand. That story is lived out daily by what you believe about God. Who is your Jesus? Who is your God? As you live in faith, your marriage will become a showcase of God's grace. God promises us, I will be with you, which means you are never alone. Now go and do the right thing. And thank you.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders Educational Programs. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.